All right, counsel.
May it please the court, I'm Steve Heistoffer, number 19800. I'm going to argue the first round here, and my co-counsel, Ivan Sarkissian, will take rebuttal. We're going to reserve 5 minutes, is my plan, for his rebuttal. This is a case that belongs in arbitration. The trial court did not apply Colorado's policy and the presumptions of arbitrability in this case to compel the association plaintiff of a live-work mixed-use condominium complex to arbitrate their claims against the declarant, against the manager of the declarant, against two declarant-appointed board members, the individuals Walsh and Kraft, in this litigation. But instead, if you look at the order that the judge wrote in this case, she decided that the declaration was intended to govern only relationships and conflicts between the owners, the members of the association, and the association itself. And said that the plaintiff's claims were not born of contract, but common law and statutory duties. She did not apply the analysis that the Colorado trial courts are to apply to determine arbitrability. Number one, is there a valid arbitration agreement? And number two, is it within the scope and when of the arbitration clause? And when addressing that scope issue, apply the guidance from the Supreme Court that really comes from the Denver, the City and County of Denver versus district court case that dealt with the DIA terminal. And the idea is that if you have language like we have in this case, the arising out of and related to language in the arbitration clause, that that is a broad arbitration clause that triggers a broad presumption in favor of arbitrability in Colorado.
Counsel, let me ask you this, though. Let's say the declaration didn't even exist. Seems to me they would still have a claim. They would have tort claim for negligent construction. So how did the duties they're alleging were breached arise out of the declaration or relate to the declaration?
That is true in nearly every case where you have an arbitration clause. There is an arbitration agreement that usually says arising out of and related to the contract.
But usually the contract is something that is comprehensive in governing the party's relationship. Okay, mm-hmm. This is a little different situation here. We have a declarant, which is the developer, okay? And so what we don't have before us is a contract between, say, the developer and anybody else who, you know, wants the owner, let's say. Okay, let's say it's a general contractor as the developer and you have an owner. We don't have a contract like that, which is typically what we have when we deal with these arbitration claims. And it's a comprehensive contract. It's the only contract between the parties. So we don't really have a contract like that. We've got a declaration which we really don't typically think of as involving construction defect claims.
Well, the declaration does involve that. The Triple Crown case, I'll give you as an example, is a case where there was an arbitration clause in the declaration, much like we have in this one. And the court, another panel of this court, ordered the individuals and the developer in that case, could compel arbitration. The declaration is just like a contract. It gets treated as a contract in Colorado. And the duties that they are claiming exist here, when you look at what the declaration says, in fact, many of them do come from this contract. So the way that the City and County of Denver case said to look at this is to determine if the allegations in the complaint touch on the subject matter of the contract. Remember, that case was about the DIA terminal. The court said the subject matter is construction of the DIA terminal. So these other things, which included an oral settlement agreement that was entered into long after the contract was entered into, were within the subject matter of the contract. So we need to look at, to go to your point, the subject matter of the contract here. And we have here a declaration that creates the project. This project would not exist but for this declaration. The declaration forms the association and makes the owners members of the association. The declaration defines what are units, common elements, and limited common elements at the project. And most importantly, the declaration sets out the duties of the association to maintain, repair, and replace structural elements, exteriors, weather enclosures, landscapes at the complex. And you'll see...
Council question, whose obligation is that?
It's the association's.
Okay, so it's the association's, but isn't, it's not the association's duty that was allegedly breached here. We're talking about the developer's duty that was allegedly breached.
Well, during the declarant control period, you'll see in the allegations in the complaint, the declarants, and they claim the declarant appointed board members, were the people that had that obligation. And they talk about that in paragraphs 40, they mention that. In paragraphs 86 through 92 of the complaint, they say that during this declarant control period, the declarant, the board members, had this obligation to repair, and they didn't do it. And in fact, in paragraph 40, they say they came out and they did repairs, and they did them improperly, and that's a basis for their claim. The obligation that the declarant and the board members had to the association to do these repairs, to maintain, and then to do the repairs and to do the repairs properly. And that's part of their complaint, that they did not do that.
But so, but that's a common provision of these sorts of declarations, is to apportion, if you will, the duties as to who has to deal with common elements and fix things and that sort of stuff. That's pretty common. I've never seen a case, though, where that was, where somebody tried to expand that to include construction defect claims.
Well, a part of their, a big part of their complaint is you failed to meet these duties, and the remedy that we want is the cost to do our obligation to repair and maintain. So when you apply the language of the arbitration clause, the broad arising out of and relating to, and the broad presumption that Colorado law puts in place because of that, we're within the scope. One of the things that's interesting in this one is when they set out what was a defined claim in the declaration, they set out four specific exceptions to that. So they determined what were the exceptions to the scope of this arbitration clause. None of those are construction defect. So the allegations that they had fall within squarely what the obligations they claim were not met are in the declarations. The obligations that they have in the obligation in the declaration creates their duty to do the repairs and maintenance that they're claiming needs to be done and for which they're seeking damages, and in fact gives them their standing to demand those damages. Without this declaration, this case wouldn't be here.
That's what I'm having trouble with. I mean, if you have a construction defect, you have a common law obligation to construct anything, any sort of residence, in accordance with generally accepted practices. It's common law duty. So I really question your premise that there wouldn't be a claim here.
Well, you're right. If there had been a project, which there wouldn't be without the decks, and if there had been this construction, which there wouldn't be without the decks, and they had the standing that they have because of the decks,
well, the
they
decks,
could make
the
a claim.
The decks are part of the whole thing, but that doesn't mean that doesn't mean that the duties arise from the decks. I mean, I'm sure there are other documents out there. The duties don't arise out of those other documents just because they're part of the transaction.
Yeah, and the duties don't have to arise from the contract that has the arbitration clause. I think that's where we're probably on different pages here. You always have your common law duties, whatever they are. If parties enter into a contract that has an arbitration clause, and it has this broad arising out of related to language, even though the plaintiff in that case may have a common law duty claim that they can make against that defendant, if they have that broad arbitration language, they're still obligated to arbitrate, even though that duty that was breached is out of the common law, whether it's negligence or some other claim. You know, an example here would be the Gergel case, the Shams case. Those were single family cases where they made negligence claims, negligent misrepresentation claims, and there was an arbitration clause in a warranty agreement. So they had a warranty claim that had an arbitration agreement. All these other claims that existed were as a result of common law duties, but the court said properly there that even though those duties arise from common law, you still have an obligation to arbitrate when you use this broad language that creates the broad presumption.
But in all those cases, you have the kind of contract I was referring to earlier, the construction agreement or the warranty agreement that relates to the construction of the building, whatever it happens to be. And that's not what the declaration is. It's just a different kind of contract.
Well, it is a contract that creates the duties in this case, or at least some of them, and they're seeking remedies that they have only because of the declaration. If you apply the...
Well, let me ask you about that, too. They're just asking for their actual damages. This is how much it costs to fix this. Mm-hmm. That's what they would get under the common law. They don't have to have the declaration to be entitled to that.
Well, the association wouldn't have standing without the decks. That's what I'm getting at there. They're the party under the
decks. Counsel, I'm just reminding you, you're just under 5 minutes.
I would like to reserve...
You can finish answering the question, but I just saw that you're approaching...
Thank you. I will reserve for Mr. Sarkisian our last few minutes here. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, I'm Leslie Tuft, registration number 34671, on behalf of Appellee Workplace Loss Condominium Association. This is a construction defect case, and this appeal involves a declaration provision in a declaration written by a sophisticated declarant with the assistance of sophisticated counsel. And based on the unique facts of this case, including the declarant's written statement in the declaration that it would create and record a covenant governing alternative dispute resolution for construction disputes, the trial court properly rejected the defendant's attempt to bootstrap the association's claims onto an unrelated arbitration clause.
Counsel, what about this idea of standing? We do have a slightly unusual situation here for a construction defect case in that it is not the individual owners of units that are suing. It is the association. And the association, of course, is formed and arises out of the declaration.
That's correct, John.
So why don't the, I mean, that's your only standing for suing, so why don't the claims arise out of or relate to the declaration?
Your Honor, in fact, Kiowa grants the association standing to sue. Section 38-33.3-302-1D states that the association without specific authorization in the declaration may institute, defend, or intervene in litigation or administrative proceedings in its own name and on its own behalf on matters affecting the common interest community. And Kiowa also makes the association responsible for repair and maintenance of the project in condominium communities. It's 38-33.3-307 provides that the association is responsible for maintenance, repair, and replacement of condominium communities' common elements. So as you stated earlier, as you were asking Mr. Heisdorfer earlier about it is the case that these claims do not depend on the declaration. The damages do not depend on the declaration. If the declaration didn't exist, the association would still have standing to raise these claims. Now, the association, the declaration does contain the arbitration provision that the defendants are relying on here. And the declaration also contains three separate compelling pieces of evidence that this arbitration provision that the defendants are relying on does not govern the association's construction defect claims. First, Article 16, which is the article that contains the purported arbitration clause, contains a separate provision that expressly states the declarant will record and create and record an alternative dispute resolution covenant with respect to quote unquote construction disputes. Second, the plain language of the arbitration provision shows that it applies only to disputes regarding the operation and management of the association under the declaration and disputes regarding certain parties' rights under the declaration. And third, the arbitration provision cites to and closely tracks the language of Kiowa, the Colorado's Common Interest Ownership Act, whose damages and attorney fee limitations apply in disputes about HOA governance and management, but not in construction defect disputes, which are governed by SIDARA.
Counsel, at paragraph 91 of the complaint, it specifically makes reference to the declaration, and it seeks damages or relief related to Workplace Loss, Walsh and Kraft regarding their failure to exercise the powers conferred by the declaration, including the power to levy assessments, against the declarant for damage to common elements or otherwise secure repair costs. Now, that part, you know, specifically the part that talks about powers conferred by the declaration and the assessments, I mean, aren't those directly relating to, arising from, or otherwise integrally involved with the declaration? Why wouldn't that at least fall within the arbitration provisions?
Well, Your Honor, first, two things. First, the fiduciary duty claims are asserted only against two of the defendants. And Kiowa separately imposes fiduciary duties on the declarant appointed board members. It's the case that even again, in the absence of the declaration, they would still owe fiduciary duties to the association for their service as declarant appointed board members. And second, the mere fact that the association has referred to portions of the declaration in its complaint does not mean that the association's claims arise out of the interpretation, application, or enforcement of the complaint as the language in the arbitration clause provides, or arise out of the rights of certain parties, arise out of the interpretation, application, or enforcement of the declaration, or the rights of certain parties under the declaration. And again, similarly, the fact that but for the existence of the declaration, the project itself wouldn't exist does not mean that the claims arise out of the interpretation, application, or enforcement of the declaration. We're not fighting here at all about what the declaration means or how it should be applied or how it should be enforced. I want to go back to my first point about the portion of the declaration, section 16.5, that states that construction disputes shall be governed by a separate ADR covenant that the declarant, Workplace Lofts LLC, would create and record contemporaneously with the declaration.
And is that document in our record?
No, the document is not in our record, and it's because it doesn't exist. I mean, defendant, Workplace Lofts LLC, had the obligation to create it and record it, and the fact that it was not recorded makes it so that it's not available to the association. It's something that would be in their sole control, and discovery has not commenced in this case, disclosures haven't been made, and they didn't put it in the record when they were arguing that they were entitled to arbitration. But we do have section 16.5 in the record, and the fact that the declaration contemplates a separate ADR covenant that's applicable to construction disputes is powerful evidence that the arbitration provision that the defendants rely on was not intended to apply to construction disputes. Section 16.5, in fact, expressly states that if anyone thinks that a dispute might come within this ADR covenant, this construction dispute ADR covenant, and also the arbitration provision that defendants rely on, then the ADR covenant applies, not the other arbitration provision. This is evidence that no one intended this arbitration provision to apply to construction disputes. Your Honor, I also want to talk about the so-called presumptions in favor of arbitration that the defendants have raised and that they discussed earlier. It's well-settled black-letter law that when determining the scope of an arbitration provision, quote, a court must examine the wording of the clause and the terms of the contract in which the clause is included. The court must strive to ascertain and give effect to the mutual intent of the parties. That's from Eitner versus Van Vliet, 870 P2D 486 at 490. And the Supreme Court also said in Allen versus Pacheco, 71 P3rd 375 at 378, that the scope of an arbitration agreement must faithfully reflect the reasonable expectations of the parties and be given effect according to the plain and ordinary meaning of its terms. So the fact that Colorado has certain favors arbitration in certain ways when an arbitration provision exists, it does not mean that you throw out the window, you know, the language of the arbitration provision or the intent of the parties. To the contrary, that has to be the governing principle. If there's evidence, clear evidence in the contract that the arbitration provision does not apply to the dispute, then the claims are not arbitrable. Here, the intent of the declaration is clear. The unique language of this declaration says that construction disputes should not be governed by the arbitration provision defendants rely on, but by the separate ADR covenant. Now, we don't know what this contemplated ADR covenant might have said. It could have provided for voluntary or mandatory conciliation, mediation, or arbitration. And defendants point out that there's no copy of this in the record, and as I've stated, it's because it doesn't exist, or it hasn't been recorded, or they determined that it wasn't helpful to them, so they didn't introduce it in the trial court in favor of their position that the claim should be arbitrated. The defendants also argue that the court should not consider the existence of the declaration's reference to a separate construction dispute, alternative dispute resolution covenant, because the association allegedly didn't preserve this issue for appeal. But the defendants are wrong for several reasons. First, this court may affirm the trial court's decision on any basis supported by the record, regardless of whether the trial court relied on that basis or even contemplated that basis. There are citations for that proposition in the answer brief. Second, Section 16.5 is in the record. It's in the same declaration article as the arbitration provision defendants rely on, and the court and the trial court presumably relied on the language in Section 16.5 and certainly had access to it when it made its decision. I've covered the plain language of the arbitration provision and that it applies to disputes regarding interpretation, application, and enforcement under the declaration or the rights, obligations, and duties of a bound party under the declaration.
Counsel, specifically, how do you respond to your opponent's assertion that because your claims, at least in part, involve allegations of failure to repair, which is something that is specifically mentioned in the declaration, that the claims do arise from or relate to the declaration?
Your Honor, I think you're referring to the allegations that the declarant had certain maintenance and repair obligations during the declarant control period.
Yes, and again, I think the allegation that the complaint alleges those were breached.
Yes, and again, the declarant and the declarant appointed board members have these duties regardless of what the declaration says, because Kiowa separately provides for these duties. And there are the claims arise out of the common law and statutory duties that the declaration cannot waive. If the declaration repeats the fact that some of these duties exist, it doesn't mean that the claims arise from the declaration. Again, even if the declaration didn't exist, the claims would exist. I want to move on to the third piece of evidence in the plain language of the declaration, which is compelling evidence that this arbitration provision here doesn't apply to the association's claims. And that is that this arbitration provision that the defendants rely on purports to bar damages and attorney's fees and impose certain time limits to raise claims that are available under SIDARA. And so it further evidences the party's intent that the arbitration provision wouldn't apply to construction disputes governed by SIDARA. SIDARA specifically precludes contractual agreements that would limit or waive these rights for damages or time periods to bring suit.
Well, in terms of damages, what exactly do you think the declaration's waiving?
Well, the declaration says specifically in Section 16.3 that it bars damage awards for consequential, special, and punitive or exemplary damages, and it restricts an attorney fee award only to those that are specifically allowed under Kiowa. And Section 16.3 identifies the act, which is Kiowa, as defined in the declaration by name. So it specifically says that it's restricting attorney's fees to those allowed under Kiowa, and then it bars awards for consequential, special, and punitive or exemplary damages. And this closely tracks Kiowa's language.
Are those sorts of damages awardable under SIDARA?
Yes, in certain circumstances. SIDARA precludes contract provisions that purport to waive the damages and attorney's fees available under SIDARA. And for example, SIDARA permits treble damages and attorney fees awards when CCPA claims have been proven, and such awards would be excluded by Section 16.3. Thus, while 16.3 manifests intent to circumscribe recovery to those remedies that are available under Kiowa, applying these same limitations to claims and damages under SIDARA for construction defect claims would violate SIDARA and be void as against public policy under 13-20-8067A. So, therefore, the only reasonable interpretation of the arbitration provision read together with Section 16.5's reference to a separate ADR covenant applicable to construction disputes and the provisions of Kiowa and SIDARA that we just discussed is that it was intended to apply only to claims brought under the declaration in Kiowa and not to claims brought under SIDARA. In conclusion, this court should not fix the declarant's mistake of failing to create and record the construction dispute ADR covenant by rewriting the arbitration the defendants rely on to include construction disputes, or by allowing the defendants to bootstrap the association's claims onto this arbitration provision where the claims don't belong. The trial court reached the right result based on the unique facts of this case, and this court should uphold the trial court's decision. I believe the briefs adequately address the balance of the issues, unless anyone has any issues that you would like me to address. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Ivan Sarkissian, registration number 28817, also on behalf of the appellants. I want to address the point that I think Judge Jones raised and Judge Fox raised, which is this idea of whether the claims that the plaintiff is making are tied to the declaration. And I think clearly with respect to Workplace Lofts LLC and board members, the two board members that have been sued, it does. I don't think you can get through their complaint and the plain language of their complaint and not reach that conclusion. They are tying in every sense the claims that they're making against the declarant and the board members appointed by the declarant to the duties that exist under the declaration. I think we need to take a step back and understand how Kiowa works. Kiowa doesn't recognize an association until the declarations are recorded. So there's no such thing as a Kiowa duty without the declarations being filed. The association and the declarant are then tied to the recorded declarations. It is from those declarations then that the declarant has a period of time where once the association is created, until the association is turned over to the owners of the property, that the declarant wears two hats. And it's in this capacity where the declarant is wearing two hats that these folks sue on, because they make the point, you, declarant, were the developer, and you had your interests aligned with trying to have this be a profitable project. But at the same time, you, declarant, had to look out for the interests of the association. That's the claim that they're making. That's what's alleged here. That is in every sense deriving directly from the declaration. It is really difficult for me to understand how that claim, at a minimum, against the declarant, against the board-appointed declarants, based on how they discharge their duties as board members of the association, don't fall squarely within this arbitration agreement. And those claims, at a minimum, have to go to arbitration. I think Mr. Eisthorfer did an excellent point of making the broader point that all of these obligations that these folks are suing on derive from their obligation to maintain the association, to make repairs to the association. We would not be here but for the obligation cast on the plaintiff, which is what we're going to hear about in this case, to make repairs to the property. And that obligation arises from the declaration. And therefore, those obligations fall again squarely within the arbitration language that's included within the declaration. I want to talk about the issue that counsel raised about the presumption and also talk about the analysis. I think we're getting it a bit confused, because I think counsel is correct that the initial analysis for the trial court is there an arbitration clause? I think clearly the answer here is yes. So I think then you get to the second question, and that question is resolved based on traditional contract analysis. But once we get past that question and we start to analyze the nature of the claims and the language of the arbitration clause,
That is where the Supreme Court has said it is the public policy of this state to favor arbitration, to look broadly at the nature of the claims, to not look at simply how claims are denominated or how you can chop up a claim and try and make it fit outside of an arbitration agreement, but to look broadly at the nature of the claims and to look broadly at the language of an arbitration agreement, and to have the public policy of the state of Colorado be to have folks take advantage of arbitration. So I don't think we can parse out, try and find ways that maybe it's a Kiowa claim, not a declaration claim. Frankly, there isn't a difference between the two. I think we have to take what the Supreme Court says and acknowledge that this is a broad analysis once we get there. And based on that broad analysis, I think clearly these claims fall within the strong presumption that the Supreme Court says applies. So I think clearly we've got a case here where these claims meet the requirements of this case having to go to arbitration as set forth in the arbitration agreement. I'm running out of time, so thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes the